Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. For the majority of American voters, those who voted for Hillary Clinton, she won the popular vote. The shocking reality that Donald Trump is the next president of the United States is still sinking in. Protests broke out here in New York and many other cities last night. Maybe some of you were in them or saw them. A prominent conversation on social media is women suggesting to other women to get IUDs. They last for years before birth control becomes harder to get under the law. Chuck Schumer, who will lead the Senate Democrats, is starting to mull the limits of the filibuster, one of his few likely tools with a Republican majority in both houses. Twitter says 75 million election-related tweets were sent on Election Day into Wednesday morning, more than twice the number on Election Day 2012. But one of the trending hashtags this time, hashtag no words. CNN commentator Van Jones did have a word that's being widely shared on social media since he said it on television on election night. The word is whitelash.
This was many things. This was a rebellion against the elites. True, it was a complete reinvention of politics and polls. It's true. But it was also something else. We've talked about race. I mean, we've talked about everything but race tonight. We've talked about income. We've talked about class. We've talked about region. We haven't talked about race. This was a whitelash. This was a whitelash against a changing country. It was a whitelash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside.
Van Jones on CNN. And now all over social media. Trump meets at the White House today with President Obama, who has promised to be very helpful in the transition. As he says, George and Laura Bush were to him and Michelle. Hillary Clinton was extremely gracious in her concession speech yesterday.
Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
So listeners who voted for Clinton or just didn't vote for Trump, what does approaching Trump with an open mind, as Clinton said there, mean to you? Or how will you be judging him as a president and a president-elect differently from as a candidate? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And listeners who voted for Trump, call in and tell us how you're feeling now that he's actually been elected and how you think he can heal the country and make America great again. If it's no longer about Hillary's or this or Hillary's or that, now what? What do you want Trump and the Republican Congress to actually do now that they've been elected? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Serious question for Trump voters. If you can't call up in the context of the campaign anymore and say Hillary's a this, Hillary's a that without saying the word Hillary, what do you want Trump now to do? 212-433-WNYC for Trump voters, for some of our lines, 433-9692. And with the president-elect famous for saying anything and his supporters saying not to take him literally, the world is trying to figure out how much of his official first 100 days agenda Trump intends to go through with. On paper, his first day in office would include cancellation of all federal funding to sanctuary cities, cities that don't report some crimes by undocumented immigrants to federal immigration authorities. That includes New York. Don't look for Mayor de Blasio to rescind our sanctuary city status.
We stand behind Lady Liberty with open arms to welcome immigrants and refugees. We always have, and we always will.
The mayor yesterday. So what else on day one? Trump may have a cordial meeting with President Obama today, but he has said he'll cancel on day one any unconstitutional Obama executive acts, any that Trump considers unconstitutional. That's believed to include the one protecting from deportation young adult immigrants who've grown up American but were brought here illegally as kids by their parents. That's the so-called Dreamers. Day one would also include lifting roadblocks to the Keystone Pipeline, which Trump mentions by name in his first 100 days agenda and his first day agenda, and in general, lifting roadblocks to production of fossil fuels, including oil, shale, natural gas, and what he calls clean coal, and the cancellation of payments to UN climate change programs to use the money to fix America's water and environmental infrastructure instead. Now, later this hour, we'll talk to leading anti-global warming activist Bill McKibben about the road ahead as he sees it. Our first guest today is CNN's Don Lemon, whose 10 p.m. to midnight show called CNN Tonight was a key venue for campaign season debate and analysis. When he's not anchoring, he's also a CNN correspondent. Don, thanks very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. I know you're up late doing your show, so thanks for being up for us today. Let me make my first question of the day, one that came from my producer's six-year-old daughter. She's not on the payroll yet. But she asked her mom, now that the election is over, is Donald Trump really going to do all those things he said he's going to do? So I think we've got a next generation journalist in the making. And I wonder if you're seeing signs yet that there are some things, yes, and some things, no. Like some of the things I listed there from his first day agenda or the Muslim entry ban or a deportation force or, you know, actually canceling DACA on day one, like I said, with the stroke of a pen. What are you saying?
Or NAFTA or TPP or any of the other things that he said he was going to do on this first date. I think what we are going to see, though, and if you listen to Mitch McConnell, is that the dismantling of Obamacare probably on the first day, and I think they're starting at it now.
But that takes an act of Congress, Don, doesn't it? So that's not something he can do on day one. He's got to get Congress to, I think, repeal 10 different bills. Or pass 10 different repeal acts. And then it's complicated. It's interesting to me that you started with that because I think that's one of the most complicated things for them to actually change, even though it's always on their lips, because they don't want to just throw 20 million people who recently got health care or health insurance out of their health insurance. They're going to, I think, have to go through a complex process of trying to figure out what to replace it with. Or is that not what you're seeing?
No, it's all a complex set of events that they have to do But when you're in the middle of a presidential campaign, there are lots of things that you can say and that you would like to do, at least in the beginning. You think you want to do it, and it's not that easy. Think about President Obama and what he said about Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo Bay is still open, and he said that was going to be one of his first priorities to do. I don't think Donald Trump realizes how difficult a lot of these things you said are going to be possible to do, especially building a wall where it's not necessarily geographically possible to do along the Mexico-U.S. border. It's a complex process to dismantle Obamacare. What do you do with those 20 million people who are already on Obamacare? And some of them, as a matter of fact, like it. Yes, the premiums have gone up for a number of people, but not for everybody. So do you just kick those people off of health insurance and then, some of them with pre-existing conditions, some of them who are sick already, how do they get their medication? How do they see their doctors? Who pays for it? I don't think he's thought all of these things through, and it's just not as simple as a stroke of a pen.
Right.
Now, Brian.
Go ahead.
He does say that he wants to, get rid of all what he says the illegal executive orders, reverse them. That President Obama has put into place, and that he can do as a president because, it's executive order. He can do that within a stroke of a pen.
I guess it's just too early for you to be hearing at CNN whether he's really going to go through with it, because those are the things that you rightly say are the most scary for people like the young adult immigrants who are protected by that Obama executive action with a stroke of a pen. So Trump could undo them with a stroke of a pen. TBD, I guess, huh?
Yeah, TBD. And yes, you mentioned children. And for me, that's one of the most important issues that came out of this particular campaign, because there are so many kids who are listening, and kids know a lot more than we think they do. And they are actually worried about some of the things Donald Trump has said. I don't know if they've heard him say them exactly, or if they're listening to their parents or adults, you know, who are having conversations around them. But a lot of children are scared, especially children of immigrants, and they're thinking their parents are going to be taken away from them. Or the language just sort of frightens them, or his tone just kind of frightens them. And I think that's one of the underreported stories to come out of this election. How do you talk to your kids?
Let's take our phone call, our first phone call. Lexi in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lexi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I feel like, Brian, I love your show, and, you know, I call all the time, and I feel like this is just a place for me to actually voice. I feel like I have a voice.
Good.
There's so many things I want to say, but I will stick to the topic at hand, which is her speech in terms of keeping an open mind, and I thought it was gracious. I'm still in, you know, cycling around the five stages of grief and many more emotions.
Where are you now in the five stages?
Oh, it goes back and forth. Denial, where you just want to hide under a rock, anger, depression, and then bargaining, you know, like, oh, well, we're going to, you know, come up and I'm going to, you know, fight this much harder in the next couple of years. Especially for local elections,
mm-hmm.
I feel like one is that, I mean, her speech was great. Her speech was gracious. It's just I'm not there yet. It's like It's like somebody saying like, oh, it'll be okay. It literally feels like a grief. Like, oh, it'll be okay. You know, this person is in a better place now. You know, and I know I'm being dramatic, but
yeah, but you're not really being dramatic, and you're not exaggerating. I mean, you know, there are so many heads nodding out there right now because people are experiencing this, like, grief.
Yeah.
And so many different people in so many different groups for so many different reasons, not like a normal election. And even a normal election comes with some grief when your side loses.
Yeah, I mean, when she lost in 2008, I was a supporter then.
Lexi, hang on a sec. Don Lemon, go ahead.
It's not just that your side loses. This is completely different. This is, you know, as I said on the air last night, I said that, again, we have to give him a chance because what's the alternative? He's the president-elect of the United States. So either we work with him or we don't. You can choose, you know, whichever you decide. And I respect how everyone feels. And it's a shock because there's someone who's going to govern the free world. He's going to be the leader of the free world, and he has no governmental experience. He has no political experience. He has no foreign policy experience. And that should be concerning to people who voted for him, to his supporters. They should be looking at him as well to wonder how he's going to do those things. And if he, you know, the conversation that you and I had, Brian, can he keep all of those promises, all of those things that he said he's going to do, like wave a magic wand, which is probably not possible to do. But I understand, I think you said your name was Lexi, you should be scared. We all should be scared because we don't know. There's no way of knowing because he has no history and no record. And that's not, that's not a strong criticism of Donald Trump. That's just the truth.
Lexi, you want to finish up your thought or go on to some other callers?
Yeah. Exactly. That's a huge part of it is that I don't know what his policies are. I really don't. And I want to have, you know, faith. So to speak, but right now I'm not at the place where I'm in a place of acceptance. And another thing that I just want to add is that I work with a really diverse population. I myself am like a white American, but my ancestors have came to America before World War II to escape Nazi Germany. And my husband is from Australia, but his family had to escape different military regimes, and they're from around the world. They were texting us all night, just like, what's going on? How is this happening? And
people are scared. Like, we're talking about real fear about what's happened can happen to individuals.
What really stuck out was what I felt, because I had traveled abroad recently in South Africa, and I've met a lot of people from the UK and talking about Brexit and just this anti-immigration vote.
Yeah.
And
and what it can
I
rise up.
Right now is this anti-Muslim sentiment, which I really am ashamed of.
And Lexi, I'm going to leave it there, and thank you so much. And Don Lemon, on that point, Faraj Shadeh of 538 said yesterday that she's afraid for the safety of people of color, not so much here in New York, but in redder places around the country where the haters might feel emboldened by the election or just all revved up. Are you hearing any indications of that actually happening, or do you share the concern?
They already do. There are people who feel that their bigotry has been legitimized. And, you know, Donald Trump supporters will say, well, you can't blame that on him. But, I mean, you have to look back at their rhetoric on that, you know, on the campaign trail and what happened at some of the rallies. And it's not that it's going to happen. It's already happening. All you have to do is, you know, look online and you can see some of the videos of people who are, you know, using foul language at people in traffic and calling them, you know, the N-word or saying, you know, Donald Trump or Black Lives Don't Matter. And then all of a sudden Donald Trump comes up in that. That should be concerning to the president of the United States. That should be concerning to all of us as Americans. No one, we're made up of all different kinds of people, and we're a country of immigrants. And it's not just a country for white people. It's not just a country for white men or white women. And I'm not saying that to be derogatory or divisive. It's a country for all of us. And as a person of color, my family members are concerned as well. And my nieces and my mother and, you know, the women folk in my family are also very concerned about those things. And again, that's not to criticize Donald Trump. This is real. And as the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, he needs to address those issues because he wants to be, he has to represent and be the president for all of us and not just the people who voted for him.
With Don Lemon from CNN, Bill in Darien, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Good morning. I am a Trump supporter. My feeling is that I do not want to see President Trump do any outreach whatsoever for the 6 to 12 months of his office. I want him to consolidate the Republicans, to get with every Republican, including the Never Trumpers, to put out his program. Essentially, what many listeners forget is 2009. When Obama essentially followed that same strategy. I think most Trump supporters...
He was elected, and he had a Democratic Congress. So
we now have a Republican Congress.
Figuring out how much he could do.
As we now have a Republican Congress.
So if for Obama it was the stimulus during the time of that financial crisis emergency and health reform...
And Obamacare.
Right.
Not a single Republican voted for Obamacare. They weren't consulted.
Well, the Democrats would have a different version of weren't consulted. But let's talk about now. What's your equivalent of that for now, if you want Trump to go forward with the Republican Congress in that way? What can you give me two things, Bill, that you would put at the top of your agenda?
I think the first thing would be tax reform and go along with that regulatory reform. We need to get businesses back in business, and people do need tax relief. And I think the elimination of Obamacare and replace it, and there are various versions that have rattled around Congress for the last couple of years that can be put forward.
Bill, thank you very much. Don, the latest numbers, with almost all the votes counted now, show Clinton did win the popular vote by 100,000 or more. They also show the disappointing turnout that allowed Trump to prevail. In the 2012 Obama-Romney election, 129 million Americans cast ballots. This year, only 119 million. Those numbers may be off by a little bit, but I think those are the rough estimates. Latinos were only 1 percentage point more of the electorate than in 2012. African-Americans and millennials didn't show up in the numbers Clinton needed. Are you shocked by the lower overall turnout?
I'm not surprised. I think part of the strategy to suppress the vote by bringing it down into the gutter worked. I'm not surprised that, you know, I wish that minorities had shown up more, not just, you know, not to say to vote for Hillary Clinton, but just to vote in general. Because I want everyone to be a part of the electoral process and to exercise, you know, their right to vote and what it is to be an American. But I think that people were so turned off by this election and that it was so negative. And then also I think that, you know, quite frankly, it was it's a candidate's own fault in some way. I think Hillary Clinton could have reached out to all parts of the electorate. She could have reached out to, you know, struggling people in the Rust Belt. She could have reached out to those, you know, middle class white Americans who feel that their voices aren't being heard. I think that
how do you think she could have done that in a different kind of way? I mean, you know, she was talking about free public college for their children, and you know, and you could go down the list of her proposals.
I think she could have visited there more and sat with them and talked to them more and made her case a little bit better. I think she is seen, fairly or not, as someone who may be more concerned, and this is, again, this is just perception and may not be reality, as someone who's a little bit more concerned with the people on the coasts, right? And I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's how it's seen. And I think that she probably could have just reached out and talked to those people more. For some reason, you know, Joe Biden has the ability to do that better than Hillary Clinton does. Hmm. And I'm not sure that could be, you know, I could be looking at him, and maybe people are looking at it in a way that's a little bit misogynistic, that he's a man and he's a guy, kind of a guy's guy, and you can sit around and have a beer with him. And I don't know if people necessarily view a woman as having that ability yet. So I think that, you know, I'm not a politician. But from the outside looking in, looking at it as a person in the media, I think she needed to have more outreach in that way, and maybe consultants could have helped her. And I also think that she could have reached out to the millennial generation. They don't really feel a connection to her. They see her as someone who, you know, every 4 years comes around, a part of the party that every 4 years comes around and says, I want your vote, and will you support me? When in the meantime, you don't necessarily, you're not necessarily there for my issues like criminal justice reform. And that's not just minorities. Young kids of all ethnicities are concerned about prison, about criminal justice reform, about the prison industrial complex, about climate change. And those people, those young people are on the streets, and they were last night, and they'll probably be on the streets again tonight, protesting not only Donald Trump, but a Democratic Party who they felt had let them down as well.
V in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks so much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Thank you for having me on, Brian. I actually want to touch on the subject of turnout that you were talking about before. I'm an engineer, and to me, everything is about the numbers. And here are the numbers. 125 ballots for any candidate or no presidential candidate have so far been counted. 8% of the ballots have not yet been counted. 8% of 125 million is 10 million for a total of 135 total ballots cast this year. According to USA Today, election officials across the country reported a 4.7% increase in election day turnout over the 2012 numbers.
V, where are you going with this? Are you saying the election was rigged and that many votes that were cast haven't been counted and have been hidden?
Give me a little leeway here. In 2012,
I don't have a lot of time, though, so get to the point.
129 million ballots total were cast.
Right.
32 million were early votes and absentee. That means election day turnout in 2012 was 97 million. 4.7% of 97 million is 4.5 million for a total of 101.5 million voters turning out for election day this year.
V, I love your mathematical mind, but you got to get to the point.
Accounted for 46.5 million ballots for a grand total of 148 million ballots cast.
V, you got to give me where you're going with this. Where are you going with this?
There are 13 million missing ballots. If we are to believe the election officials who say that 4.7% increase in election day turnout, then the total number should be 148 million ballots cast, not 135.
Don, is this the first you're hearing of this allegation?
No, I hear a lot of theories about, you know, whether the election is done or not. And I also see a lot of theories online that, you know, Hillary Clinton still has a pathway to the presidency because the ballots haven't been counted. I don't see that. I think some of them are conspiracy theories. I think, yeah, there may have been a higher turnout on election day But overall, considering the entire way that we do the election, people who mail in their ballots, people who early vote, people who do absentee, it's the number of people who voted are actually down. Maybe on election day more people showed up than the overall election and the way that we vote, less people showed up. There wasn't a wave of white voters. That's a false narrative that has been put out there. Less people voted this time than voted last time.
Kitty in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Don Lemon. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener.
Great to have you.
Thank you. I guess my question is for Don. This narrative of Hillary winning and it being a landslide and watching y'all talk for so long about how this was going to happen and everyone was wrong. And I am mad at you. I'm mad at the media. I had friends knocking on doors in Cleveland 2 weeks ago who came back and said, he's going to win. Everyone is out of touch. And we just wrote it off. And here we are today. And I'm mad. I'm so mad at you.
He's going to win or she's going to win?
They said he's going to win. I know that came out of her mouth funny.
Well, can I ask you, are you mad at Donald Trump and his campaign?
Yes, I'm mad at so many people.
Maybe this is just one of my stages of grief, but
we watched and we listened and we thought this was over.
You're mad at the pollsters, right?
Yes, and the reporting of it and the narrative.
So, Don, let me. I understand you don't do the CNN poll. You're a reporter and an anchor. But the CNN poll, like almost all of them, misread the outcome that was coming.
Yeah.
You must be hearing things. I don't know if there's been a meeting yet. Probably nobody slept yet. But what are you hearing about how that happened?
Well, I don't really have anything to do with the polling and even the way that they count the votes or that they survey people. Even Donald Trump's campaign's own internal polling and his campaign manager, who is a pollster, had it wrong. You can be upset at anyone you want, but it's not something, no one was conspiring to turn the election one way or another to give a narrative.
Not conspiring, but getting things wrong. People have to take stock of that. And again, I realize that you didn't do this. I heard that same report that you just mentioned yesterday, which is so interesting that even the Trump campaign's internal polling made them think they were going to lose.
Yeah. Everyone thought, even until Election Day, the people inside the Trump campaign were saying, listen, they were telling reporters off the record, he's probably going to lose, but he fought a good fight. And then it turned out to be something different on Election Day. I always say that nothing is over until the people have spoken. The only poll that really matters is the polling place. And so, I hear these polls every single day and every single week since I've been covering this campaign, and especially towards the latter part of the campaign. She was up 8 points. She's down 2 points. They were so volatile that you didn't know what to listen to. But I will tell you, and if you go back and do your research and look, at least I did, from the very beginning, I thought Donald Trump had a chance when nobody had a chance. And I lost friends saying, listen, people are coming up to me and they're telling me they like this guy. It's a whisper campaign. I haven't heard anything like this since Barack Obama in 2008. And no one believed me. And up until the last days of the campaign where the pollsters and the pundits were so sure that he didn't have the ground game, and, the second Comey letter had come out and, she was surging ahead in the polls and slowing his momentum, that I actually started to think, okay, well, actually, maybe she has the clearer path. But up until then, I thought Donald Trump had a real chance and probably the advantage and was going to win. And I had said that to a number of people. I'll listen to the polls and listen to the experts. But the only thing that really matters that the American people need to know is actually going out. And what matters is turnout. Like your caller said before, the number of people who turn out. It doesn't really matter what the narrative is about who's going to win the election. If you believe in your particular candidate, then what is incumbent upon you as an individual, the only real power that you have, is to go vote. That's it.
Right.
Everything else.
But
is
there were talk. There were a lot of things that conspired to leave people who weren't very engaged apathetic, whether it was what you mentioned before, which was the concerted effort by the Trump campaign to so discredit Hillary Clinton as the focus, you know, of their efforts, that people who might lean toward Clinton would go, oh, I don't like either of them, and stay home. And an assumption that was the fault of the collective polling world's failure to get it right that probably left some people apathetic. Not that it was probably enough to flip the election, but these are all contributing factors. Kitty, we're running out of time, so I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for making your first call to the show. Please make more. Don, before you go, the cable news channels have come under criticism for, on the one hand, giving Trump so much free exposure from early on in his campaign because he was good for ratings more than the other candidates, but also criticism from Trump for being hypercritical of him compared to others. With hindsight, for your own time slot, do you take any of that criticism as true?
I take the criticism, and I say we did give him a platform. We did give him – he got more airtime than anyone else. But I will also say one of the reasons he got more airtime, for at least for me, is because he said yes. And when we were trying to figure out what these candidates were about, we reached out to all of the candidates to come on and to do interviews. Donald Trump is a candidate who said yes, and he used the media in a way that other candidates did not. So the other candidates cannot complain about not getting airtime when I can't come over to your house and force you to do an interview.
But it wasn't just interviews. It was carrying rallies because there was all this, ooh, what is Trump going to say next? He's so provocative. When, you know, you weren't carrying Ted Cruz rallies or whoever else, if you want to go back that far.
No, we did carry other rallies. And if there is violence at rallies, then I think people want to know about that. I do think, you know, maybe you're right. I have to go back and look at the analytics. I had no idea, you know, whose rallies we carried more. But in the beginning, I think Donald Trump just did more and had more rallies. He would come on to talk about a rally. And if he comes on to talk about a rally, we're going to show the video of the rally, which is one way that he was smart. Or he would be on his way to a rally and call in and say, hey, we're going. He'd call in and say, we're going to, you know, to Michigan today, and we're going to talk about the people in the auto industry and whatever. And so he did use the media in a way that I don't know if I want to go as far as to say manipulate the media, but in a way no other candidate has done. I remember reaching out to Ted Cruz, to Marco Rubio, to Hillary Clinton, to all of those people to come on and do interviews, and they would say, no, we don't want to do it. And we would call Donald Trump's people and say, can he call in at such and such a time? And they'd say, let us get back to you. And then inevitably we'd get a call back saying, yes, we will call in.
Don Lemon
and
hosts.
So we would put him on.
Don Lemon hosts CNN Tonight, weeknights 10 p.m. to midnight. Don, we really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure coming on anytime.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Bill McKibben next on what happens with climate change. Stay with us.